Hello everyone, welcome to this new episode of Zero to Educate. Thanks for tuning in, and today we have a really cool topic for you and a really cool guest as well. The conversation today will be all about momentum. You might have looked at the superb returns of NSE Alpha or the Momentum Index and wondered if there was a fund tracking the index. Well, UTI has recently launched India's first Momentum Index fund, tracking the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 Index. Quite a mouthful. So this time we thought we would catch up with the people who are making the index that the fund tracks. So to understand the fundamentals of momentum as an investing style. Today we have Aman Singhania, the head of products and vice president at NSE Indices Limited. He heads the index development and the research function at NSE and works on launching innovative indices. He also heads the fixed income valuation and analytics function at NSE. Prior to NSE, Aman headed the index development and the bond valuation function at CRISIL. When he's not building indices, Aman gives lectures at business schools and also takes corporate training sessions on investment and risk analytics. Thank you for doing this with us, Aman. Before we get started, our listeners would want to know your background, your journey into the market, and we would want to understand more about what you do at NSE Indices.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Mohit, for having me here. So, by qualification, I'm management graduate, did my MBA in finance, post which I got my CFA and FRM charter. Quickly got into working with CRISIL as an analyst in index development and bond valuation. Spent almost 10 years at CRISIL. Also got a chance to work with Bank of America Merrill Lynch in the New York City for 6 odd months, which was back in 2010. Got a chance to work on index analytics there. And presently, I am heading index development and research at NSE, also heading bond valuation and analytics there. So our primary job is to create innovative indices. So you would have heard of Nifty 50, Nifty 100, Nifty Mid-Cap 100, Nifty Mid-Cap 150, Nifty Small-Cap 250. But not many know that we have more than 200 indices, both equity and debt put together. So my team, as a part of index development and research, creates and launches innovative indices beyond traditional market cap weighted indices, so that ETFs and index funds can be launched on these indices. So that's pretty much what I do there. I'm enjoying, developing these smart beta, non-traditional, factor-based indices. Yeah.
Aman, when it comes to the word index, at least in India, people know of two indices at the back of their hand, and one would be the Nifty index, one would be the Sensex index. But still, some people would want to know what exactly an index is and how it's made. So before we start the conversation around momentum, would you want to explain this to our listeners, what an index is, how it's made?
Sure. So you rightly mentioned, before we actually get into the technicalities of understanding momentum, it would be good to understand, the basic type of index funds and ETFs and the basic types of indices that they track. So if I were to classify the passive space, the index funds, ETFs, indices into three parts, they would be: one, the traditional market cap segment, wherein, so that's the first class, which is where you have broad-based ETFs or broad-based index funds which track broad-based indices. Like, for example, you would have heard of large cap ETFs, mid cap ETFs, and small cap ETFs. Such ETFs track market cap weighted traditional indices, for example, Nifty 50 or Nifty 100. Now, the selection of stocks in these traditional indices is based on size of the company, which is the market capitalization of the company. So, for example, Nifty 50 tracks the performance of top 50 companies in terms of their size, which could be full market cap or free float market cap. Nifty 100 tracks the performance of top 100 large cap companies. After large cap, you have mid cap segment. So Nifty mid cap 150 index tracks the performance of the entire mid cap segment, which is essentially the 150 companies that come after the top 100 large cap companies. So ranking from 101 to 250, which is essentially 150 companies after the large cap, is a mid cap segment, and Nifty mid cap 150 tracks that segment. Likewise, Nifty small cap 250 index tracks the performance of small cap segment, which is essentially after the large cap, and then after the mid cap, you have the next 250 stocks, which essentially is the small cap segment. So, and coincidentally, if you add up Nifty 100 with Nifty mid cap 150 with Nifty small cap 250, you arrive at 500 stocks, which is essentially Nifty 500. So, you know, at a very macro level, you have Nifty 500 broken up into 100, which is large cap, 150, which is mid cap, 250, which is small cap. The essence of these indices is they are traditional in nature because the selection of stocks in these indices is largely based on the size of the company or the market capitalization of the company. Of course, there are riders from a liquidity point of view, from a free float point of view and things like that. But broadly, it's the size segmentation of the market, 100, mid cap 150 and small cap 250.
Right. So is the segmentation generally always based on the capitalization and then the riders come into place, or is there any other sort of segmentation that also happens when an index is made?
Sure. So first is, of course, the traditional segment wherein, you know, the classification is based on size, wherein I said large, mid and small. The second category or segmentation is based on sectors. So, for example, there are sector ETFs. Now, these sector ETFs track sector indices like Nifty Bank or Nifty IT or Nifty Consumer Goods, for example. So, you know, so beyond size segmentation, there is sector segmentation, which is also the second broad category of passive funds, ETFs or index funds. And if you go beyond them, then comes this third category of passive funds, which are strategy or factor ETFs. Now, these ETFs track strategy indices, also known as smart beta factor-based indices. Now, in a smart beta factor index, the selection of stock is based on certain factor or certain common set of characteristics across stock. Now, as against Nifty 50, Nifty 100, Nifty mid-cap 150, where the selection of stock is based on size, here the selection of stock is based on certain common factor. For example, high value, high quality, or high growth, low volatility, high alpha, or let's say high momentum. So essentially, when we bundle stocks or we select stocks based on certain characteristics that these stocks exhibit, that's the third category. That's the factor-based selection. So, you know, I'll give you an example. So there's an index called as Nifty 100 Low Volatility 30, which is a low volatility index strategy. Now, this index, as the name suggests, selects 30 least volatile stocks from a universe of Nifty 100. So Nifty 100 being large cap, 30 least volatile stocks are selected on a periodic basis. So at any point in time, this index would have a basket of low volatile stocks selected from the large cap segment. Now, unlike the traditional indices like Nifty 50 and Nifty 100, where selection is based on size of the company, here the selection is based on its nature of being low volatile. So 30 least volatile stocks are selected. Likewise, if I can give you another example, Nifty 200 Momentum 30 index is a momentum index strategy. Here, 30 high momentum stocks are selected from Nifty 200. So Nifty 200 is the top 200 stocks, essentially the large mid segment of the market. And from there, we select 30 high momentum stocks. You know, so these are examples of the third category of indices that I was speaking about, which is strategy or factor indices. Here, you know, just to summarize, strategy or factor indices are based on quantitative factors or methods and not based on size and not even based on any opinion or speculation. So I'm not selecting a stock because I like it fundamentally.
Right.
I'm selecting a stock, or I'm selecting a basket of stocks based on a factor, where the factor could be, as I said, momentum. It could be low volatility. It could be high value. And again, we can define value as maybe low price to earnings multiple, low price to book value multiple, low price to sales ratio, and things like that. I can have a quality portfolio. For example, I want to only invest in 30 high quality stocks selected from Nifty 100. Again, I will first define what quality is, and I may define quality as, let's say, high return on equity, low leverage, and maybe low variability in returns or earnings growth, for example. Again, globally, there are different definitions of quality, different definitions of value, different definitions of momentum. But the point is, once it's frameworked, you quantitatively select stocks based on certain factors, and then that's the index strategy that you may want to run.
So Aman, just to summarize this for our listeners, an index can be based on the size of a company, the category of capital it falls into, large cap, small cap, mid cap. It can be based on the sectors that the company is falling into. It can be a pharma index, or it can be a bank index, which has banking or pharma related companies, or it could be a factor that is chosen. And today, since the factor that we are talking about is momentum, Aman, could you help our listeners understand what momentum means in context with the financial markets and how it affects companies and their stock prices?
Sure. So, you know, in financial markets, momentum refers to the tendency of stock price trends to persist. So, for example, stocks that have outperformed recently are believed to continue to outperform for some more time. Similarly, stocks that have underperformed recently are likely to continue to underperform for some more time. Now, at NSE, we define momentum as stocks' recent short-term returns adjusted for recent volatility. Thus, a momentum portfolio will quantitatively select stocks that have recently performed well, again, on a risk-adjusted basis. Now, why do we do that? This is done with a belief that such stocks may continue to perform relatively well in the near future as well. Now, a momentum index thus will always be overweight on recently outperforming sectors and underweight on recently underperforming sectors. Now, let me talk something about momentum investing. Momentum investing has gained huge popularity worldwide. In fact, the global AUM, asset under management in passive funds that follow the momentum strategy, has been increasing. The largest ETF in the US, which is based on momentum factor, currently has around 15 billion USD of AUM, which is equivalent to 1 lakh crore, 1 trillion INR. And this is as of December 2020. And this only shows how popular momentum as a strategy is.
Right. Aman, why does momentum effect persist? Why does it happen? You mentioned that recently outperforming stocks have this tendency to outperform. Recently underperforming stocks have this tendency to underperform. Why does this happen?
Sure. So, you know, this could be because of something called as efficient market hypothesis. Now, let me explain that. Efficient market hypothesis holds that when new information comes into the market, it is immediately reflected in the stock price. So, market is actually informationally efficient. That's what it means. And hence, nor fundamental analysis can help an investor generate abnormal return. Now, you know, efficient market hypothesis implies that whatever information is publicly available is already factored in into the stock price, and hence it may not be possible to beat the market over a longer period of time. So if the markets are efficient, there's nothing incremental that you know which can move the price, because everything that the market knows is already factored into the price. So that's the efficient market hypothesis. However, momentum factor's ability, which has been observed empirically, to generate excess returns in the equity market has actually earned it the title premier anomaly, according to Eugene Farmer, who is the father of efficient market hypothesis. And I guess one potential explanation to why actually momentum effect persists is that investors tend to sometimes underreact, sometimes overreact to news affecting stock prices, because, you know, it's more to do with behavioral investing as well. Does any news in the stock price is reflected in, so any news about a company is reflected into the stock price maybe gradually if there is more underreaction than overreaction. So instead of, you know, the news getting reflected in the stock price instantly, it takes some time for it to get reflected, which is anti-efficient market hypothesis. For example, you know, prices tend to increase for maybe weeks or months after a positive earnings surprise, as more and more investors, you know, revise their expectations upward, you know, then herding then begins to take place as other investors observe the strong performance and maybe they increase their exposure, leading to further increase in price. You know, this same process works in reverse as well, you know, when it comes to declining prices. So, you know, another potential reason for existence of momentum factor is profit taking. So, you know, as the stock rallies, some investors may rush to take profit. So likewise, in a downward trend, investors are reluctant to realize losses on their investment because there's loss aversion. So, you know, thus stocks may not fall as much as it should be on bad news, maybe due to loss aversion. However, you know, either case, in both the cases, the point is that there's a delay in adjustment of stock prices to all available news, which creates an upward or downward trend in stock price, which is what we call as momentum. So, you know, it's a simple to understand a factor, very popular globally. The concept of momentum extends beyond stock markets. It's not just stock market where momentum is observed. It has been documented across asset classes, geographies, over a longer period of time in academic literature. In fact, there's a paper, Value and Momentum Everywhere, published in 2012, that shows that momentum premium existed across asset classes that they tested in different markets, be it stocks, indices, bonds, currency, commodity futures, etc., over longer horizons.
Aman, since we've discussed what momentum is, there's another question that comes to mind. How does one measure how strong momentum is in something in the current moment? What are the measurements for momentum? Are there different ways to do it? And what is the most followed way, let's say, in the market?
Sure. So again, just like quality, value, there's no standard definition for momentum. But remember, momentum, as we said, is the tendency of stocks that have done well in the recent past to continue doing well. So, and that's why most measures of momentum are calculated using recent past returns of stock. For instance, we can calculate a 12-month momentum using the price return over the last 12 months for all stocks in our universe and then maybe rank them. Stocks with higher 12-month return are said to have higher momentum than stocks with lower 12-month return. So essentially, we are saying the 12-month return is a proxy to a 12-month momentum. Now, often this return is adjusted for how much the stock has fluctuated over the same period of time because and when I say fluctuation, I basically mean the volatility of the standard deviation. Right. The idea is that stock with lower fluctuations, of course, are preferred over stocks with higher fluctuation, other things being equal. So essentially, a stock with higher return but at lower volatility. So essentially, we're looking at risk-adjusted return is termed as a high momentum stock. Again, different measures of momentum can be created depending upon what horizon one wants to look at. For example, you may create a 6-month momentum measure if you believe in more recent returns. So you may create a 6-month momentum, you may create a 12-month momentum, you may create a 9-month momentum. At NSE, what we do is we look at 6-month momentum, we look at 12-month momentum, and then do a simple average of the two. So this is the approach that we've used for one of our momentum indices.
Right. Now that we have some understanding of how momentum works and what is looked at when measuring it, could you talk to us more about the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 Index?
Sure. So, you know, Nifty moment, 200 momentum 30 is one of the factor based smart beta indices that we recently launched. And this index aims to track the performance of a basket of 30 high momentum stocks selected from Nifty 200 index. This index has been backtested since April 2005. Now, in this index, stocks are selected based on their momentum score, which is, as I mentioned previously, calculated using stocks' recent 6-month and recent 12-month price return adjusted for their price return volatility. So at any point in time, the index would have 30 stocks with high momentum selected from both large and mid-cap stocks. The index has been developed to capture the momentum factor. So essentially, when you're buying those 30 stocks, you're actually getting exposed to momentum as a factor. And the strength of this factor lies in its ability to swiftly adapt to changing market conditions. You know, by every time by selecting outperforming stocks and sectors and cutting down exposure to underperforming stocks and sectors. You know, once these 30 stocks are selected every 6 months, the weight of each stock in the index is based on two factors or a product of two factors. It is the momentum score of the stock and the free float market capitalization of the company. So other things being equal, higher the momentum score of the stock, higher would be the weight of the stock in the index. Again, you know, from a diversification point of view, we cap the stock weight of each stock at 5%, so that, you know, no single stock becomes too large in the portfolio. Again, this exercise is done on a semi-annual basis, so the index is reviewed on a 6-monthly basis. And this index is created and maintained by NSE Indices Limited, which is a 100% subsidiary of National Stock Exchange of India Limited.
Yeah. Arvind, now that we have some background on how momentum works and how this momentum index is structured, one pertinent or very important question that all investors would have is, how often has this index outperformed, let's say, Nifty or underperformed Nifty? Could you elaborate on that? How has been the performance of this index since the time you've backtested it?
Sure. You know, so every time we develop and launch a new index, we backtest it, you know, in order to see what is the kind of returns and consistency of returns over and about traditional indices like Nifty 50 or the parent of the index, which in this case is Nifty 200. So this index, the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 index, was back tested till April 2005. So if you look at the overall period of April 2005 till February 2021, the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 index has delivered a per annum CAGR of 19.5%. So, you know, that's slightly more than 19% per annum. And if you compare it to its parent, which is Nifty 200 index, that index has given 14.2% return per annum for the same period. So essentially, we're talking about an alpha, an excess return of around 5-ish percent per annum. And if I look at it on a year-on-year basis, so this is, of course, a average of a long-term average of 16 years. If I look at it on a year-on-year basis, the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 index has outperformed Nifty 200, which is its parent, in 13 out of 16 calendar years. So out of the 16 calendar years, this Momentum index has outperformed the parent index in 13 calendar years. Again, this is across bull, range-bound, and mild bear markets. So it has covered all phases of market. The only 3 years when this strategy underperformed the parent was in 2008, 2009, and 2018. You know, so the point is, while the numbers look exciting, 13 out of 16, the thing to keep in mind is momentum strategy can indeed underperform, and maybe in deep bear markets, something that we observed in 2008. It can also so it initially lagged the recovery of 2009 also, because the index took some time to dynamically adjust its market leadership after the global financial crisis. So while it has had majority of the years outperforming, there have been instances of the index underperforming as well. You know, the strength of this index is its ability to swiftly change itself to changing market conditions by selecting outperforming sectors. You know, something that I mentioned previously, and if I were to give some examples to you, you know, by the end of 2016, automobile sector was doing well. You know, 6 month and 12 month returns were 30% and 70% respectively, and thereafter automobiles weight in the momentum in index increased from maybe 5% to 12%, and after its weight increased and the momentum actually continued in automobile sector, the 9 month return post inclusion was 50%. You know, likewise, metal also did well in after end of 2016 with a 6 month and 12 month return of 30% and 140% respectively. Again, the momentum index was successful in capturing this and increased the weight from 15% to 25%. The post facto return for metals was around 35%. So, and broadly speaking, over the last 5 years, the index has had exposure to sectors like consumer goods, financial services sector. Of course, the weights would have changed at different point in time. For example, end of 2016, consumer goods had 8% weight. A year later, the weight increased to 31%, maybe because there was high momentum in consumer goods. More recently, calendar year 2020, the pandemic year, again saw a change in market leadership where, you know, financial services underperformed. And because of work from home culture, IT outperformed, pharma outperformed. Again, you know, the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 Index adapted itself. Pharma's weight increased from 8% in December 2019 to 19% in January 2021. IT, which had 0% weight in December 2019, increased to 22% in January 2021. So the idea is that the index seeks to capture those sectors that exhibit higher momentum.
Right. Aman, now that we've spoken about the performance of the momentum index as well, are there any myths around momentum investing or the momentum index that you would like to debunk? Something like how value or momentum are exclusive. If you're doing value investing, you cannot do momentum. Is that true?
You know, one myth or maybe a broad understanding is that if, and then I'll also come to your point of value and other factors. One challenge that we come across is whenever we backtest a strategy and if it has outperformed significantly, it translates into a belief that that outperformance will continue. I think it has to be taken with a pinch of salt. No index strategy can outperform consistently every year. Because, you know, the performance of different factors, you know, be it momentum, value, alpha, quality, low volatility, all of them move in cycles. You know, for example, during the great financial crisis of 2008, low volatility factor did relatively well. It fell lesser as compared to other factors. The Nifty 50 fell by 50%, low volatility fell by 40-odd percent. Low volatility also outperformed momentum factor because momentum factor in 2008 fell by 60%. So it actually momentum factor underperformed other factors. But this reversed in 2012, for example, where momentum did well with 38-odd percent. Nifty 50 gave 29-odd percent. Momentum also outperformed low volatility in that year. In 14 and 17, which were, you know, bull years, momentum did well with returns in the range of 49 to 57%, when Nifty only gave around 30%. So, you know, one typical myth is that a strategy, if it has outperformed, it will always outperform. Not really. If specifically talking about factor investing, they move in cycles. And one should look at momentum investing, keeping these things in mind, because
right.
past performance is never a guarantee of future performance. Talking about myth, another myth about momentum investing is that there's a lot of portfolio churn in momentum, and that's why it is not a profitable strategy, because momentum basically means buying what is hot and quickly keep churning the portfolio, right? So the cost of churn or the degree of churn is always higher. Now, while this myth or this statement is not completely untrue, however, there are ways to reduce the churn. So even if you're actually investing in momentum strategy, you may lower the churn. Now, there are two ways in which we at NSE lower the churn in a momentum strategy. One is we don't churn our index frequently. So we only do it twice in a year. So we do it on a 6-monthly basis. Second is that we use a buffer mechanism, which makes a change in the index only if a new stock has a significantly higher momentum score, and we remove a stock from the index only if its momentum score has fallen significantly. So it's not that marginal increase in momentum will lead to an inclusion of that stock in the index, and or a marginal fall in momentum of an existing in stock will lead to an exclusion of the stock from the index.
Right.
So because of this buffer mechanism, the overall churn of the portfolio has relatively come down, but we should keep in mind that momentum is supposed to be high churn by nature. But the point is that despite this churn, the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 index has generated excess return over Nifty 200 index over the last 5-year, 7-year, 10-year, 15-year horizon on a point-to-point basis. Now, whether it justifies the kind of cost for transaction or not is more subjective in nature, wherein a 5% alpha in history, whether it's higher than the churn cost or not, is something which every investor can calculate for themselves. If I were to talk about one more myth, it could be that any strategy or index strategy or something like momentum, it would produce excess returns only occasionally. Now, we wanted to test this hypothesis that momentum investing will earn excess return only occasionally. So our analysis shows that historically, again, this is empirical data only, with a 5-year investment horizon, the Nifty 200 Momentum 30 index has outperformed the Nifty 200 index 98% of the time, which basically means that any investor who would have invested in history with a 5-year investment horizon would have outperformed the 200 index 98% of the times on a rolling return basis. And out of this 98% of the times, 67% of the times, the excess return that the investor would have earned would have been more than 4% per annum. And, as your investment horizon moves from 5-year to 7-year and 10-year, the frequency of outperformance increases to 100%.
Right.
So, yeah. So, those are those few myths which may be there around the momentum factor.
Yeah, Aman, since now we have spoken about momentum, about indices, how they work, there's one question somebody might want to ask you. So let's say all these traditional indices that we have, which are based on the market capitalization of the companies, as and when the market capitalization goes up, the weightage of the company in the index also goes up.
Right.
So it goes down, the weightage of the company in the index also goes down. So can it be like said that these traditional cap weight indices are also momentum indices in disguise?
Yes, in a way, but maybe with some caveats. This is because in a traditional cap weighted index like Nifty 50 or Nifty 100, the selection of a stock is based on company's market capitalization or the size, which in turn depends on two things, the share price and the number of shares. So, if a mid-cap stock's market cap increases due to either the increase in price or increase in number of shares, it may get included into a large cap index. Even after inclusion, its weight may increase again because of maybe the price increase or recapitalization wherein new equity is infused. So, in a way, it is momentum you can say that if there is momentum in market cap of the stock, that drives that stock in the traditional index. However, in a pure momentum strategy, we're looking at momentum in price. So it's essentially a price momentum of the stock in a momentum strategy. So the difference is that select or higher weight in a traditional market cap weighted index is driven either by price move or by recapitalization or more number of shares of the same company, so which is essentially the overall market cap of the company.
Right. Aman, there's another question that somebody who's been listening to this episode till now might have. You initially spoke about multiple factors being there when it comes to, let's say, making an index. Momentum was one of these factors. Is there any research that NSE Indices Limited has done on how momentum works in, let's say, a multi-factor implementation?
Sure. So we launched the Nifty 200 Momentum Index just last year, and this index again aims to give exposure to momentum factor out of large mid stocks. We also published a white paper on this strategy, and which is published on our website, nseindia.com. And again, you know, we've described the index returns, risk, and different attributes of the index. We've spoken about the performance, the ability of the index to, you know, adapt itself across cycles and all. Additionally, our multi-factor indices are there, which are designed to reflect performance of a portfolio of stocks where, you know, that are selected based on combination of two or more factors selected from various single factors like quality, value, alpha, low vol. So, for example, we have a few multi-factor indices like Nifty Alpha Low Vol 30. As the name suggests, these are 30 stocks which have high alpha and low volatility at the same time, chosen from top 300 stocks. Again, you know, there's Nifty Alpha Quality Low Vol 30. Again, these are 30 stocks which are, you know, selected because they are good at being high alpha, high quality, high low volatility. Then there is Nifty Quality Low Vol 30. So this is a two-factor index. Again, 30 stocks which are high quality but low volatility. Then there is Nifty Alpha Quality Value Low Vol. So all four combined together. So 30 stocks which are good at high alpha, high quality, high value but low volatility. So we launched these multi-factor indices, I guess, 5 years ago. And again, they give exposures to investors to multiple factors at one go. The intention of a multi-factor index strategy is to counter the cyclicality of a single factor. Now, we've seen this, we observed this, that single factor, be it alpha, be it low vol, be it quality, be it value, they are always vulnerable to cyclicality. They will perform well in one cycle, will not perform well in another cycle. But if you invest in a multi-factor, or if you combine multiple factors, it counters that cyclicality with each other. So it provides investors a choice to take exposure to multiple factors through a single product. So if someone launches an ETF or an index fund on these multi-factor indices, the investor would get exposure to all the factors or whichever factors they like through a single index product. As market gets more comfortable with the concept of momentum that we've recently launched, our next step would be to launch multi-factor indices, which would also include momentum as one of the factors.
Among the listeners we have with us right now, they would have a question since they've been listening to what momentum is and how it has functioned and how it has performed since you've been backtesting it for your momentum index. And this question would be, let's say, what you think the investors should think about momentum. I mean, since you would be seeing and explaining how momentum investing works to people, would you be able to like bucket an idea about how people should think about momentum?
Sure. I think that's an interesting question. You know, I believe that investors should think of momentum investing as a, first of all, globally accepted investment style that, at least in history, has shown that it can, it has the potential of generating market-beating returns over longer term. And I think more informed, sophisticated investors should adopt a core and satellite framework, you know, wherein the core part of their investment portfolio includes maybe traditional beta trackers like product linked to Nifty 50 or Nifty 100, and may consider adding the momentum strategy or products linked to momentum strategy in their satellite component of the portfolio, so that you know, for them to generate overall alpha for their portfolio again over a longer run. However, since momentum is an aggressive investment style, investors should be prepared to accept the higher volatility and also maybe some periods of underperformance along the way. So, you know, it's kind of cliche, but diversify and have core part of your portfolio which is more traditional in nature, and maybe some part which is the satellite part, there to be a little adventurous and take exposures to these factor-based index strategies.
Aman, could you briefly elaborate on what core and satellite portfolios would mean from a capital allocation point of view?
Sure. So, you know, this is a very traditional approach towards investing, wherein, you know, wherein a large part of your portfolio, which is, let's say, 70 to 80% of your portfolio, remains simple in nature and is needs to be invested from a longer time horizon point of view. And in the Indian context, that can be invested in products like passive funds linked to Nifty 50 or Nifty 100, which are products that represent the larger or the large cap segment of the market. And the purpose of this core part of your portfolio is to earn market-linked returns, which we also call as beta returns, because they will give you returns which the market would generate over a period of time. So market here being Nifty 50 or Nifty 100 or Nifty 500, for example. So whatever returns the market generates, you also get the same returns. Adding to that, the satellite, which could be 15 to 20% of your portfolio, could be that part which is expected to earn some alpha over and above the beta, which is the 80% of your portfolio, which can be done through maybe a little more aggressive investment strategy, which can be achieved through either stock picking or active mutual funds, or maybe within passive funds through factors like alpha, momentum, or any other factor that you believe can add value to your portfolio. So, you know, that's essentially the core and the satellite approach, where core is 80%, 70-80%, and the satellite is 20-30%. And again, that changes depending upon your risk appetite, your goals that you want to achieve. And it's always good to maybe take advice from your advisor before you actually do your asset allocation and core and satellite approach.
Right. Aman, before we conclude this episode, our listeners would love to know your investing approach, your philosophy when it comes to investing. Would you want to share that with us?
Sure. So, you know, as part of, because you're part of NSE, we're not allowed to have direct equity exposure. So my investments are largely, you know, through mutual funds. My portfolio follows a very simple asset allocation strategy of 70% equity, 20% debt, and 10% alternatives. I mean, it's a very well-tested asset allocation approach. And 70% equity, I think a large part of it is through passive index funds, largely linked to Nifty 50 and Next 50. I have very less allocation to active mutual funds now. The 20% debt that I have is largely in the form of provident funds, which is EPF and PPF. And the 10% alternatives, including cash, is maybe some bit of gold investment. In equity funds, again, I invest on a regular basis. And also, as and when markets fall beyond a certain threshold, I have a simple rule of investing any surplus as and when the market falls beyond a certain threshold. So it's a very simple strategy of asset allocation at the first place, 70, 20, 10. And then investing more as and when, A, on a regular basis, and B, as and when markets fall a little.
One last question, Aman. Is there any investor or any investing-related book that has influenced your investing strategy? Or if there is, could you recommend these books to our listeners?
Sure. So a lot of investors that I admire, and in terms of books, at least out of the books that I have read, I liked one book, which is The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And I typically suggest this book to the B-school candidates where I go for lectures. Second book, if I were to recommend or suggest, is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Again, a very good book from an habit point of view. And if I were to name the third book, it would be Fooled by Randomness by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. So these are books which I really liked. And if I were to suggest someone, I mean, these are few of them.
7 Habits of Highly Effective People could be seen as employing the momentum strategy in your life, is it?
No, not really. I don't count myself in those set of people as of now, at least.
Aman, thank you for doing this with us. There were lots of takeaways for me, for everybody who's listening to this. I'm sure we would want to have you back again. Any concluding remarks from your end?
Thanks a lot for having me here. It's been a pleasure sharing my thoughts, sharing my experience, sharing my my investment philosophy. I enjoyed it as much as you did, and I hope the audience would do. Thanks for having me here.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.